got them back there.
The sign is up. My name is Noel, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, I learned a little bit this morning. I always learn at this workshop new things. I learned that this is for the virgins here, and I've no problem with that, except I really think that Bernard should move, you know. I worked with Bernard for a long while, and you get a lot of phone calls when you work with Bernard, let me tell you. You get a lot of phone calls. One lady said, if you don't get him, my mama's going to call. But anyway, I really enjoyed Bernard. He's a wonderful guy. And I want you to know that I'm really getting the hang of this marriage thing. I want to bring you up to date on that. I'm really getting the hang of it now that I've been married almost 3 years. Last week I went out and bought the paint and the rollers and all like that and left it there for her and came here this weekend. It works if you work it, you know. They were giving me the sign down the back there, you know. Y'all were here the other night, I gave the sign. That's the sign of spirituality. Don't forget it. Well, it's a simple thing, but don't forget it. It is fun, but it's simple, huh? Connected to people, connected to God. See? If you're not connected to both, you can't have spirituality. Don't forget that. If you're not connected to both, you can't. And where it all happens, of course, is here at the angle. See, here. You know where I'm pointing? See where I'm pointing? This is where it happens. I tell my patients sometimes, God will not get you well. He already has. See, I tell the patients when they come that, they say, well, you know, I want to pray to God, pray to God. God will not get you well. He won't get anyone in this room well. Because he already has. See, are you going to do it? Are you going to use it? That's the point, huh? And so, when you make the sign, this is where it begins, right here. The angle is here. This is where it is. Are you doing what you need to do in order to get well? I always have some terrific experiences that other people don't have at this conference. I see a lot of people and they want to talk to me and tell me things about themselves. And I usually have this one experience which I had yesterday. This guy came to me from the workshop here and he wanted to tell me something that were very difficult to tell, that he hadn't told anyone else in his whole life. And he told me those things and he said, you know, I have about 10 months in the program, and he said, I really don't think I'm making any progress, you know. And I said to him, as I always say, I have the one answer, would you have come to somebody 10 months ago and told them what you're telling me? Oh, no, he said, no way. Well, I see. Do you see the progress you're making? See, the problem is we're so intent on looking for God, if you want, or whatever, the invisible, that we don't look at what's happening to us. See, people keep saying, oh, I'm not getting well. Even when they say to you, oh, I'm not getting well, ask them, how often have you said that before? And they'll say, oh, I never say that. Wow. What's this openness all about? See, you don't know you're making progress. You don't know it. You don't know it, that you're making progress. I used to tell this meditation, I don't think I've told it in a few years that I have, I used to tell you all here about the one of my favorite parts of the gospel is the scene on Calvary on the cross where the good thief, there are two thieves, one each side of Christ on the cross, And the good thief, we call him, you all heard this story, of course. He says, Lord, will you remember me when you come to your kingdom? You know, and like Jesus said, like he didn't say, won't you forgive me? Will you give me another chance? If I have another life, I'll do it differently. I swear I'll make up for what I've done. He didn't say that. He just said, Lord, will you remember me when you go into the kingdom? And like the Christian church in all of its power says that Jesus Christ turned to that man and said, this day you will be with me in paradise. And the church has always said that was the very first canonization of a saint. We call that man Saint Dismas. And he's the patron saint of those people who are in prison. But there was a canonization because the guy said to Christ, will you remember me? Not will you forgive me. He didn't ask for that. Not that we know of. He didn't ask for that. He just said, will you remember me? You know, it's we forget the power of being human, of change in ourselves. We forget that. And I think the problem is we've been given too many examples of people who have done what they call marvelous things, and we say to ourselves, well, I can't do that. You can do that. You can do it. I mean, look what we are doing. Look at what we are overcoming. You know, one of the biggest things that we have to overcome in addiction is denial. The essence of being an addict, I think, an addict or addicted to booze or alcohol, is that you deny you are. I get up every morning now after 9 years of sobriety, and my disease tells me most mornings you don't have me. Most mornings my disease says you don't have me. There's something going on that tries to lure me back into my disease. It's going to happen to us the rest of our lives. Now it gets less and less, and the power to overcome it gets more and more. But one of the things that we have to overcome in our lives is denial. You know, my mother died when she was 74 or 5 years of age, and she never had a drink in her entire life. Not one drink in her entire life. I don't think not one. And like she used to brag about this, she was the youngest of 15. And from that situation of being the little one looking at all the rest, she saw terrible abuses in disease, in this disease. All her brothers were drunks and her father died of alcoholism. And she saw all this, so she hated booze, she hated it. And she used to tell us that people who drank were bad and there was never any booze in our house and all that kind of thing. My brother became an alcoholic, I became an alcoholic. You know, but she used to tell us these things. And I used to say to myself, she never had a drink, she never had a drink. Now I recall, you know, that for the last 20 years of her life, she was never without a bottle of Benadryl. Never. I mean, she could not live without Benadryl, which as far as I know is about 40% alcohol. Even though you can buy it in the store, you know. And for other problems she had, she was constantly on Librium. You know, here's a woman that I say, and she would say she never had a drink in her life, but it was just pure denial. This disease hides itself from us all the time. And it's just a matter of denial. And you have to see that. And we see that it passes into other stages of our existence. Like guys say, I'm not making any progress. And I want you to look at yourself and see the progress you are making and proclaim it. Like when I say to these guys, would you have done that 5 months ago, 6 months ago, 7 months ago? Say, oh no. And then it lights up in them. Wow, I am making progress. I am. And like a little book, The Imitation of Christ, that I used to read, there was one little thing I remember from it that was wonderful. It said, if we were to clear up one fault every year, if we were to clear up one fault every year, very soon we would be perfect. Can you imagine if we started to bring this program into our life one little bit, one little inch every day, how wonderful it would be in our lives? Suppose we were to bring it in every day. And I want to tell you how I do that. A guy asked me yesterday, how do you keep it fresh? Oh, I come here and I get all this stuff and I go home. But how do you keep it fresh next week and next month and next... You know, how do you do that? And the way I do it is I'm becoming more conscious of myself. See? Please, you know, some people do get a little bit upset, I think, with me sometimes. People who have a good program and they are attached to a religion or something and they have a good program. Now, I say, you know, I always say, leave them alone if they do. And I think they get a little upset with me because I talk more about the self than I do about the God. In fact, you know, the answer for me is not getting into God, it's getting into yourself. But when I got into myself, I found God. You understand? When I got into me, I found him. When I really got into me, though, I found God. And so the answer for you is not to be getting into God as I see it, but the answer is to be start getting into yourself. Start saying, you know, am I an honest person? Like, I would rather you guys go to the mirror than go to church. I mean, if there's a prayer, I mean, if it's one or the other, I'd like you to go to both. But if it's going to be one or the other, I would like very much for you to get up every morning and go to that mirror and look in that mirror and say, do you like that guy? I mean, would you recommend him? You know? Would you recommend that guy? Let me ask you this. How would you like to spend the weekend with him in a motel? Some of us would, some of us hell absolutely would not. And I mean that. If it's going to be a choice, like I would rather you have a sponsor than have a religion, if there's a choice. But like, I mean, don't give me this stuff, I have a sponsor. I mean, you know, I think that's one of the big heresies of AA, is that I have a sponsor. That's a big heresy in AA. But I'm asked, when I say, do you have a sponsor, I want to know, do you sit down with him once a week? Are you on the phone to him once a week? And in the beginning, are you meeting with him once a week and on the phone three times? No? Sometimes, I'm in Bronner Hospital now, and sometimes we do evaluations, and I find them very interesting. DUI are sent to us by the Cork, and we do evaluations. There's a team of six of us who handle these or so. And well, I'm one of the guys who do it, and it's very, very interesting now to see these guys coming in, you know, in denial from the courts. And one of the things on the bottom of the evaluation is, what are your recommendations? And I'm beginning to say that I want this man to go to an open AA meeting once a week for the next 2 months. I want him to read the big book of AA. And number three, I want him to get what they call an AA, a sponsor, and meet with him once a week for the next 2 months. Because the power is so tremendous in doing those things. I send that evaluation back to the court. You know? It's the power of this guy meeting with... You know the reason we were created? I know that the religions and the, you know, the different books and catechisms say all kinds of things. I mean, the one I learned was the reason we were created was to know, love, and serve God in this life and to be happy with Him forever in heaven. Well, see, I don't think that's kind of quite true. I think the reason we were created is to be together. That's why. I really think it's that simple. That God created Adam, and if you look in Genesis, He said, oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Look at that, that's terrific, that's terrific. Oh, no, He said, no, it's not that good. He needs somebody to be with Him. And that's the story of creation. That's the story. I mean, that's it. There's no other story. God created Adam, and He said, oh, terrific, terrific, terrific. In fact, the name Adam means man. He wasn't going to create any more man. The name Adam means man. It's not person, it's man. Oh, it's a terrific, terrific, terrific. There you go, there's the garden, there's everything. Okay, you're fine, you're terrific. Then He said, nah, He's not. He needs somebody to be with him. The purpose of creation is to be together. I mean, God said, I'm going to create people and they're going to be together, and in that way they're going to be happy. So why wouldn't we find the power of getting well with each other? You know? And the more I read the Gospels, the more I'm finding that Jesus was, and I'm a Christian, I can say this, Jesus kept pointing out to guys to go and get healing from one another. I love that scene where he said to the guy, you know, if you're going to give your gift, if you're coming into the temple and you have this gift to give, for goodness sake, forget it. If you are not reconciled with your brother, forget it. Go out and reconcile, then come back and give your gift. Go to your brother first. He was saying, like, take the eighth and ninth step. You know? Take the eighth and ninth step. But you do it. Don't ask me to do it. Don't send them roses. You do it. People say, how do I keep this fresh? You do it. You begin to do it. You know? Begin to see where the love and the power is. Begin to see where the power is. You know, everything that wonderful that's happened in this world happened through man and men and women. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, remember I told you all before, Henry Ford didn't wake up one morning and find the Model T in his backyard. It didn't drop down into his backyard. He put it together. You know? Every screw and every wrench and every little part he put together. It was him. It was him. God works miracles through people. We go to the moon. We build those rockets. Those scientists sat down. They put them together. You know? Do you know that something like 70% of all cancers today can be cured? Do you know that? 70%. How do we do that? I mean, there was no miracle cancer spring found in some field, you know. How do we do that? We did it. We went into these genes and those genes and went into, put it together and said, look. I was really over here listening to PBS radio just last week. I was going to work and I was listening to this, and they had an article on this guy who kind of in his laboratory found a cure for one of these stomach diseases or something. You know, he found it. But he was in there putting little things together for years. Do you know? God works through us. Miracles. Now, you know, we need to begin to see that. You know, it's the fact that you see that keeps it fresh. Like, I go out every morning and I walk the dog. That has become my job. Anyway. And this old pound puppy, sometimes she'll do her stuff quick and sometimes she won't, you know. So while I'm there watching her efforts, I take the first three steps. I take them. And you know, my whole day, you know, will come together on that instant, on that little action of mine. My whole day will come together on that little action. See? I am powerless. It's not that I cannot drink. Understand? I can. But I am powerless over it. I'm powerless. What a terrific thought. What a great thought for me. I am powerless over that. Now that means that there's a power taken out of me. The power to drink is taken out. So the second step says I put a power in there. The most important of all is the second, not the first. That I put a power in there. Do you understand? I put a power in there. Maybe it's the power to touch a leaf or see or take a patient 10 minutes today. How about taking a patient 10 minutes for yourself today? You know, you go to lunch from 12 to 1. Well, the boss wouldn't mind if you went from 12 to 1:10. And take a stroll in the sun. You know what I mean? Take a stroll. Instead of, if you're going to Wendy's, instead of coming out of Wendy's, jumping in your car, take a little stroll. Or if there's a grassy bank, sit down. For you. Remember what I told you, God's first question, don't forget it. Did you enjoy this life? You know? I mean, if someone really gave you something wonderful, like a BMW or something, and they said, there it is, and they saw you a year later, you know, they'd say, how was it? If God has given you this life, think of your life. It's physically one. Think of, you know, the eye, you know, like I said the other night, it's a camera, it prints. Not only develops, it prints instantly. And God's going to be sitting there, and you're going to come in, and he's going to say, how'd you enjoy it? And an awful lot of us will say, better get this answer right. Wonder what he's talking about. See? And he's going to be pissed off. No, he's not. He's not. But I mean, you would be, wouldn't you? I mean, he's given your physical. He's given your mental. You know, sometimes you can sit down and in 30 seconds you say, good God, have you thought about my whole life in 30 seconds? What powers we have of imagination. I mean, what a welcome Walt Disney must have got. What a welcome Disney must have got. Jeez, God will say, wow, you're fabulous. What an imagination you had. Do you know? I think sometimes cartoonists will get a better welcome than the saints. You know, it's in your mind. What about your mind? What about your mind? My best moments are when I go to my kid, Sarah. The last thing at night she tells her mom, usually she wants me to come in. It's only so that she doesn't have to go to sleep all or quick. You know, she doesn't want to. And then she'll sometimes say, tell me a story. You know, I used to be one of, you know, the three bears or whatever, you know. And I start to make them up. You know. I start to make them up. I told her this story. I did tell her the story about the king one time who wanted to go on a journey. It's an old story, but it's a great story. But the king wanted to go and he said, I'll give half my kingdom to the person who will shorten the journey for me. And people came in and they tried to say, well, I'll carry you, or I'll get fast horses, or nothing. No, that didn't work. And it was then this little child came in and said, I'll tell you how. And she started to tell him a story, and he began to listen. And when the story was finished, the journey was over. Oh, he said, you made the journey so short. And I tell her this story, and she keeps saying, tell me the one about the little girl coming in. You know, imagination. It's so wonderful. But he gave us what? Physical, our mental, our mind. The things you can do with your mind. It's unbelievable how you can make other people happy with your mind. We are painting at home and we both sat down and looked at colors. And we were just going to paint off-white or whatever. And we said, wait a minute. And Marcel went down to the paint store. And he gave her these, you know, he gave her this stuff, these different paints that match. Oh, there's a possibility. There's another possibility. There's wow. We spent days on this. You know what? When it was over, we were closer. When it was over, it was the power of this imagination bringing us closer. What a gift. And you know what? God is up there saying, nice going. Jeez, look at that, look at that. Look at that, I'm so glad I invented paint, he says. You know? It's so unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, this is how you keep it fresh. Is that you get in here and you say, this is the miracle in here. It's not out there. It's in here. And this is how you do it. This is the program pulling me in. You know? Talking to me about miracle, the miracle of my hands. Remember I told you about my mother who was crippled for the last 40 years of her life, never used her left hand. I use my left hand. Look at that. Do you know my mother would have given $1 million if she'd had it to be able to do that? And I can do it. See? Maybe we're fortunate. Maybe God puts people who are crippled in our way so that, you know, like that movie, The Rain Man, or is that what it's called, The Rain Man? But you know, that this boy, this young man, was put in the way of his brother, and his brother, who was normal like you and me, became so different because of his brother, who had this retardation. You know, I work with a guy now, and he's a wonderful guy, in Bronner Hospital. And his brother is retarded. And another employee came to me one day and he said, do you know, do you know the reason why Dan, this is my boss, is so patient? I said, no. In fact, he is a very patient guy. He's very patient. Well, he said he grew up with this guy, this brother of his who was retarded. And he said, I think that's why Dan is so patient. And Dan, who is so patient, touches the lives of so many people with his patience. I mean, everybody loves this guy. You know, you see him stopping to talk to the guy picking up the garbage. He's standing there talking to this guy and he gets into some explanation with him, you know. And he's a lot of work to do, big responsibility. He's running 3 programs out there, and he's responsible for it. If he's not going, the super boss calls him and says, you know, what the hell's going on? He has time. I think God sometimes, maybe God put my mother in my life crippled so that I would get out there in the morning and say, thank you. Oh, thank you for my hands and my feet. See, now what am I talking about? I'm talking about this being the important thing. Yeah, I think we'll get back to heaven and we'll say to God, he'll say, well, did you enjoy your life? And we'll say, well, I was in church a lot. He'll say, you blew it. So you blew it. You know, churches are nice and all that kind of stuff. Did you ever notice that churches are nice, and I think it's very important that we have them, but that 90% of the time churches are empty. Do you know that? They're empty. Full on Sunday. The other 6 days of the week, they're empty. I'm not saying they're not important now. That we have churches and that we have stained glass and that we have beauty and that we have places that we can go like that. But for the most part, they're empty. Our lives are not empty. They're full of people. And if we people ourselves, if we really people and appreciate people, then we're going to, you know, don't forget, God created us to be together. To be together. And to be able to say, that looks nice. And I liked what someone said that, you know, a relationship is not 50% and 50%, it's 100 and 100. I said that here last night, it was so wonderful. A relationship is not 50%. You have to remember that. And as Steve was talking to me the other day about don't be a traitor. It's great. Great message. and you're in a relationship, don't trade. You know? Don't be a trader. Don't say, well, I'll give you this and maybe you'll give me that. But if you don't give me that, I'm not going to give you this. See? To be your best, you have to give 100%. Suppose everybody got up in the morning and said, hey, I'm going to give 100%. God created me to be a giver. God created me to be a giver. So I'm going to give. So keep it fresh. How are you going to take those steps? Put the power in your life. Second step. A wonderful step. Put the power in there. You know, the guy who helped me get well first, I told you 100 times maybe, he said, you took the bottle out, you left the hole. If you don't fill up the hole with something, you're going to put the bottle back. And I did. You have to heal the wound. You have to heal. And sometimes you do it with patience. In fact, when people say to me, how did you get well from this disease? I always say one thing primarily, up front. It wasn't prayer, and it wasn't God, and it wasn't, for me anyway, it was time. I eventually said, I am dedicating myself to getting well. It was time. Sometimes you just have to be. Sometimes you just, and listen, when you get into being, you say to yourself, that's what it's all about, actually. That's what it's all about, is being. And that's where the full enjoyment comes into our life, is in being. Take care of this power. Bring a power in here and take care of it. You know, be in touch with somebody, higher, lower, higher, lower. But touch somebody every day. Touch them. Go on your knees first thing, say, please, no drugs today. Touching the higher power. Or if you don't do that, that's fine. But be in touch with somebody. And say, this is how I'm feeling. This is how I'm feeling today. Having a good day, having a bad day. But be in touch. Don't forget, as alcoholics, our disease, our bottle wants one thing from us, and that is for us to be alone. The only guy I'm afraid of in this program is the guy who starts to say, now I know what to do. That's the only guy to be afraid of. Now I know what to do. Instead of having up front, we can do. There's a lot of fear when you say I. The most spiritual word, as I said the other night, in the 12 steps is the first one, as far as I'm concerned. And the first one is we. The first one is we. Be a we people. Walk forever as a we person in this program. Walk forever as a we person. Because when we're alone, listen, drugs is this size. It's that size. Nobody's wellness is going to walk in here today and say, good morning, I'm your wellness. And nobody's drug is going to walk through that door and say, I'm here to say goodbye. That's not going to happen. And let me tell you, you think you're patient? Your drug will outweigh you. It will outweigh you. It will outweigh you. I know guys, and I'm sure you do too, who relapse after 10 years. I know of a guy by name. 2 weeks ago I learned that after 14 years he's gone back to his bottle and he's worse than he ever was after 14 years. Drugs is this size. And it's just going to destroy us. And that's why two or three or more, if we become we people, it's not going to happen. We can do what I cannot. Now listen, I want you to remember one thing, and it's this. That nobody ever quits drugs. Nobody. Or alcohol. Have you got that? If you are an alcoholic, you never quit. You must replace. Okay? That's all I want you to remember. That if you are an alcoholic, as I am, and I'm not taking your inventory, I'm not telling anybody here you are, but if you are an alcoholic, you will never quit your alcohol. Never. If you are a cocaine addict, you will never quit. You must replace. I have this vision of a guy I know who quit alcohol 35 years ago, never had a drink since. He's never been to the program. And as far as I know, he has no program like you and I. He has lost his children. Only last year he lost his wife. They have been married 40 years. This man was a roaring tiger to live with. An unbelievable bastard. See? And that's because his disease was roaring in his life. He quit alcohol. But in actual fact, he didn't. The disease, the ism, is rife in his life. And it's simply because he never replaced it. Put something in there. And here at this workshop, we learn what we put in there. It's us. I mean, really us. Conscious us. Thank you for my eyes. If everybody in this room got up every morning for the next 50 years and said, thank you, God, for my eyes, you would never use again. I mean, you would become saints. Listen, if it was hard, I'd tell you. If it was easy, I'd tell you too. It's just simple. But we're forgetters, you know? How many of us here let other people take our day away every day? We let the clock take ourselves. You know, we get up and we go, rush, gotta go, forgot this, rush now, forgot my coffee, where am I getting my coffee? Goodbye, day. No? My little girl is learning how to play the flute, you know, and she said to me one morning last week, about 7:15, would you like to hear the F? I've learned the F. Well, hell, no, 7:15 in the morning. You know. I said, as a matter of fact, sir, I would love to hear it. I had nothing else to do at 7:15 anymore. And you know, as a matter of fact, I didn't. I had nothing else to do at that moment. I wasn't in a hurry. I didn't have to leave until about 7:10, 7:15. See? I really have it set up, thanks to this program, I have it set up that nobody's taking my day away. You know, when I think about it, honestly, I don't think that I've overslept so that I had to hustle in the morning in the last 12 months. When I think, I haven't thought about that now. You know how you have these mornings where you oversleep and it's, whoa, Katie barred the door, let's go. I haven't had a morning like that in 12 months. And that's because I set it up that way. And my day is pretty good. My day is pretty good. And you know what? When my day is pretty good, I have time for God. Morning, God. How are you? This is Noel. And checking in. All is well. There's a lot of things out there I can't handle today alone, but you and I can. You and I can. A lot of things I can't handle. And guess what? You and I can. And that's how my day begins. And that's true. I just haven't had a morning where I'm late, you know. I don't think. In the last 12 months. I can't remember. So, it can be done. Don't tell me it can't be done. How do you keep it fresh? You get into yourself. You know, the alcoholic comes in and there's always a wall between him and God. Big, big wall. See that? Big wall. Here he is at the foot of the wall. Can't get through. And everybody says, the answer is spiritual. He said, by God, I better get through this wall. The answer is spiritual. How am I going to get through? And see, what I want him to do is, he can't get through that wall. But if you come out here away from the wall and get into yourself and say, are you honest? Are you really honest? Or are you a dishonest son of a bitch? And you say, I'm dishonest, but I want to be honest. Do you like yourself? I didn't, but never thought about it. But now I'm beginning to like myself. See? Do you care about your family? I mean, do you talk to them? Well, hasn't been much going on recently, and wow, where's that walk? Wow, where's the walk going? And you get this perfect vision of the higher power. No wall. But where did it happen? When you got into you. Now, as soon as you stop, the wall comes up and you say, oh, where's my rosary? Where's my Bible? Where's my... Your sponsor tells you, listen, for crap's sake, get into yourself. So you come back out here and you start asking those questions. Am I courageous? Do I say good morning every morning to God? And the wall comes down. Ooh, look at how, isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? You know what? This is not Protestant, Catholic, or Jew, is it? Huh? It's not Protestant, Catholic, or Jew. Ooh. And you see this wonderful God, and she looks as pretty as a picture. Got it? Self. Self. There is no greater miracle. We created the telephone. We created the automobile. We created the rockets. We created the medicine. We did it. We. God said, go and do it. Go and do it. And as soon as we realized we could, God showed up and you say, thank you, thank you. It's wonderful. I love it. I love it. Listen, sometimes you guys will get the feeling or the idea that I do this stuff all the time. I don't. But serenity is not being at peace at all times. Serenity is handling your life in the storm. You say to me, I'm not doing it. That's fine. By saying you're not doing it, you're doing it. You see that? Do you? How do you keep it fresh? By saying, I'm not doing this stuff. But if you see, you used to not say that. People would say, how are you? You'd say, I'm fine. And what is an addict? A liar. A hider. See? What is an addict? He's a liar and a hider. How are you? I'm fine. See? That's the disease. You know, the addiction is not the stuff you put into your mouth or nose. It's the dishonesty. It's the non-trust. It's that I can do it. See, you know, when you say I can do it, remember you are directly against God, directly against Him. Because His plan was we. His plan was we. And like, you know, I know guys like Ron just said, my religion is very, very important to me. I know guys came into this program, that's what happened to them. I'm not saying don't go back to you. I know guys in this program who are wonderful Baptists who would make you want to be a Baptist. God for help me, I mean, you know. I hear all my Irish relatives going crazy up there this morning saying, what the hell's wrong? But you know, I know people who do this. It's fine, it's wonderful. You know, I know guys, and they come to treatment, they say, oh yeah, the misery, the, oh, money, talked about long, la la la, long sermons, ah. Then they go back to their religion after they get into this program, and you meet them and they say, you know what? That guy has good things to say. Very decent little guy, and I loved what he has to say, and I loved the involvement in my church, and gee, you know, when I go to church, people hug me, and it was there all the time, you know. It was just that we were full of disease. It was there all the time. Now, I'm not saying that's for everybody, and I never have ever told anyone in this fellowship go to church every Sunday. Never. But they go back and they look for the fellowship and the friendliness and the touching and the wonderful things that happen, the warm things that happen in their church, and they're there. It's not them, it's us. And if they're not there, you can change it. Walk in, sit in the pew, turn to the guy beside you and grin. Ooh. Ooh. He turns to his wife and says, you know, they're trying to pick you up in church now. But you know, that's how you keep it fresh, is getting into you and realizing, you know, you have the power to change. You have the power to change. You know that club, there's a club around the country they call the 240 Club. I don't know if it's in Atlanta, but it's all around the country. And they maintain that everybody, whether you like it or not, contacts 240 people once a week. I think it's once a week, every single one of us. They've got this all computerized or whatever, and they feel that a minimum, we contact 240 people in our lives every week. I mean, the guy in the Big Star, and the guy in the drug emporium, and all these people, and the guy, you're standing in line, and all, you know, some guy's looking at you and saying, isn't he a horse's ass? You know, like, you know, or isn't he a nice guy? Or something. We contact people, and this club is there to say, do it well. Just be your best. Just be your best. That's all. And you don't. Do you know that AA, for example? Do you know that AA asks everyone not to be missionaries? Very big thing, you know. We do. If you know it, like if someone asks you for help, please give them the help. But we don't go door to door saying, "Have you any drunks in there?" No? Well, for one reason, we got enough of them, you know. And in case you hadn't noticed recently, you know, there's no shortage in meetings. I found this great little meeting up in Roswell. There were about 10 people or 8 people going to it, and I said, I found that this is great. Last week, there were 35 people at that meeting. We have no shortage. So we don't need your drunks, thank you. You know? There are no missionaries. See, we want you to be. And then the drunks will see it. My favorite tradition, the one that's most powerful for me, is the fifth one. I'm sure a lot of you have heard this, and you, maybe it's your favorite too, because it says that we carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, not who still drinks. It doesn't say that. It says that you carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And that's me, in case you don't know. That is me. Carry the message to me. And if you carry it to me and I carry it to you there, the guy who drinks will get well. Because you know he's going to see it. And he's going to say, I want that. Okay, so it's the self. Where's the spirituality? It's here. We are tabernacles of the Most High. We are tabernacles. And I'm not talking about the presence of God in us, which is another talk that we could get into. I'm just talking about us, the human being. We are tabernacles. We smile and we grin and we share and we say hello and we say I love you. And I have time for you. And that makes us tabernacles. It makes us walking missionaries of goodness and of life. Of life. Life is a celebration, but not too many go to the party. Life is a celebration. But not too many. Now we go. We go. All right. It's on the self, huh? On the self. Are you celebrating the self every day? And we can all keep it fresh. How? Put the steps in your life. I never say to anyone, get out of here and get well. I always say, personally, this is my message. I'm not saying it's the message of the program. But I say to everybody, get out of here and use the steps and get well. Use the steps. If you're not using the steps, then, I don't think that you have that electricity in your life. So get out of here and use the steps for you. You know how it is. People come into the program all the time. They're getting well for their mother or their wife or their probation officer. Eventually they have to come to the point where they say, this is for me. This is for me, so that when God does ask you, did you enjoy it? We will know that he's talking about life and we'll say, gosh, it was great. The alcoholic in recovery has a good program, dies saying, nice going, come on. Come on. It was a wonderful trip. I mean, I know that that's the way Bill Hollingsworth felt. And not just him, but a dozen other people I've known in this program. It was a great trip. I just want to finish by reading Psalm 30. It's one of my favorite psalms. You know, that's something I recommend. I do recommend you that you get a little psalm book, something like this, and that you read the psalms. Psalms belong to everybody. You know? And very often the guy is very like some people in AA, the psalmist, doesn't really believe in future life or anything, you know? There's a lot of evidence that there was no belief in future life in the early psalms. It's just a guy talking to the higher power about how things are today. He sits outside the tent and he says, Lord, I praise you because you have saved me. Now, saved in the psalms means life. You gave me water. He's sitting in the desert. Lord, you gave me water. Think about the things God has given you. I do this with our patients all the time when talking about spiritual things. I want them all the time to be able to tell me that the gifts they are into in themselves. Are you into your eyesight? Are you into the, do you like the way I'm standing here? Do you like it? I'm balanced here, in case you don't know. I'm not hooked into this thing. Do you like it? Do you know there are millions who can't do it? Do you know that? The guy's doing the road race in Atlanta, you know? Ask them how much they would give to be able to stand here. Whew. What a gift. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm in touch. Sir. He said to you, and this psalm is 4,000 years old. He says, Lord, I cry to you for help, and you healed me. Isn't that nice? You healed me. We all talk about healing in here. 4,000 years old, the psalmist is grateful. You healed me. And you kept me from the grave. Alcoholics. I was on my way to the grave, but you restored my life. Second step, that word is in there. You restored us to sanity. You restored my life. A nice word, isn't it? Right out of the Psalms. I'm skipping around here because it's a long psalm, but it's so beautiful. He said, you are my refuge and my defense. How about saying that to God every day? Hey, God, you are my refuge. You are my defense. You're like a Sherman tank. Did you ever hear God called a Sherman tank? He says, guide me and lead me and keep me from the trap. Now, there's a good prayer for you all to carry around for a little while. Get up in the morning and say, Lord, today keep me from the trap. Old faces and old places. Huh? Old attitudes, old behaviors. I used to be able to say, I'm sorry, and make reparation. And sometimes I get in that mood that I can't do it now. Save me from that. Save me from the old me. You get it? He said, I will be glad and rejoice because of your constant love. He says, you see my suffering and you know my trouble. The fifth tradition, carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Every alcoholic suffers, you know. You do and I do. I get royally pissed off with life at times. Royally. He says, you see my suffering. And you know my trouble. He doesn't say take them away. He says you see them. Ooh. Feels good, doesn't it? He said, I felt secure and I said to myself, I will not be defeated. I called to you. I begged for help. What will you gain from my death? Guy tells God. Hey, what are you going to gain from my death? Now cut it out. We don't know how to talk to God. God's going to get us for that. You didn't have to talk to me. See? He says, if I die, are dead people able to praise you? So hear me. Be merciful and help me. Don't let me go to the grave. Because dead people don't give you praise. See, he didn't maybe believe in future life. See that? That's okay. He didn't believe in it. Sometimes the only thing we believe in is future life. He didn't believe in it. Not interesting. So he says, help me. Be merciful. And then he says that beautiful line. That's one of the prettiest lines in all the Psalms. Psalm 30. Read it for yourself and take it into your life. He says, you have changed my sadness into joyful dance. Recovery. You have changed my sadness into joyful dance. You have taken away my sorrow. You surrounded me with happiness. So I will not be silent. I will sing your praises and I will give you thanks forever. You have changed my sadness into joyful dance. I said the other night, and I want to finish on this note, that when I say you get into yourself, it is possible to do it. That's the only thing that you must believe. So if you don't leave this for the nuns and priests and the monks and the... Please don't leave it for people like that. It's possible. It's available. It's available. Take your shoes off and walk in the wet grass. Feel it. Feels good. Do you know? It's available. It's available. And all that the program asks us is that we have progress, not perfection. Nobody knows what perfection is. All that we ask is that we have progress. We do that together with the simple helps of powers like one day at a time. Thank you very much.